Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you're having a good day. Our topic for today's webinar is Social Impact Bonds and Impact Investments in India, Opportunities and Misconceptions. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Pratibha Jain, Head, Delhi Office, Nishit Desai Associates. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, and welcome everyone today in the room and on the phone for joining us for a very important topic. You know, as a firm, we believe in social business. We try to ensure whatever we do also has a social impact. So, you know, we like to believe we are a corporate law firm with a difference. Keeping in line with that, just to very quickly introduce the topic for today, and then I will hand it over to our very dynamic keynote speaker for today. Why are we discussing about social impact bonds? If you see the current environment for social sector, any kind of social in, sector projects, the financing today is basically based on grants, and there is really no control over the outcome, which is in objectified terms. The idea of social impact bonds, and you know, this is new to India, but it's been tested globally, you know, and successfully, is really to move the risk of non-performance in terms of social impact from the government, from the not-for-profit foundation, any of those stakeholders, moving it from them to the private sector. So how does that really work? I mean, the whole model of pay for performance. Any social impact investment would have four or five key players. There would be the investors. There would be an intermediary looking to pool the investment, and in a social impact bond model, it'll be also the issuer, the intermediary. The issuer provides the service providers with the working capital for the project, which the service provider is providing to the ultimate service recipients. Then you have the government slash, you know, various foundations who are basically your typical social impact funders. I won't call them investors, who will provide the funding to the intermediary only upon the actual social impact parameters being met. And that's the key difference. That's the pay-for-performance model that we are looking at. And in the Indian context, of course, you know, just given the breadth of issues that the government's typically worked on, I think it's key for the government first to emulate this concept and probably can have the maximum impact. We've been working with various clients on pro bono or otherwise cases where we've looked at the projects and they can have massive impacts. We're talking of billions of dollars and having mass impact at education, healthcare, et cetera, levels. If we can combine the government funding, the private sector, the various foundations in a structure that works and is a win-win for everybody. So, I'm really excited today because let me first very quickly introduce our keynote speaker for today. Sri Rajaraman is Indian Administrative Service Officer, and he has held various administrative positions in the areas of investment promotion, FDI, public sector undertakings, etc. He was MD of Chennai Metro Railway for nearly 4 years during its construction phase, Commissioner for Commercial Taxes in Government of Tamil Nadu, and Joint Secretary Expenditure in Government of India in the recent past. He currently serves as the Additional Secretary Investments in the Department of Economic Affairs, Ministry of Finance. I've had the pleasure of working with her closely, and I can tell you he's extremely astute, but also somebody who works to understand and make a difference. We had a brief conversation this morning, and certainly you already know more about this topic than I did in terms of what's happening globally and what needs to be done. On that note, sir, I will hand it over to you to open up the discussion.
So thank you, Pratibha. So, and good evening to all of you. I would like to start with a correction. I am also learning like you, Benadine, because to be honest, I think nothing much has happened in India except a few experiments here and there, you know, in terms of, say, like the Rajasthan, I think there was a fund, I think. And there are a few other models which are very close to the social impact bond model that we are talking about. So in general, I think the government, if you look at government, I mean, I think many of the schemes and programs are targeting a particular output and a particular outcome. So they often suffer from many of them, not I wouldn't say all of them, but many of them suffer from a delivery problem. You know, I think the service delivery problem, wherein the efficiencies are probably not up to the mark, or probably even the outcomes and outputs are not probably as expected as planned in the early stage of the program. So therefore, there have been several efforts in the past to move these programs to get an outcome focus. I think so. I think that's where I think probably a few years ago there was an outcome budget that started getting presented in the parliament. So that is a step forward, but I think there are a lot of other steps also that need to be taken. So while those efforts are in progress, and the Niti Aayog is working on a output-outcome framework for every scheme and the program to connect the dots, so that perhaps there is a case where probably several schemes and programs overlap, and within the government, between state governments and central governments, between the private sector, civil society organizations, and the government. So there are several programs which probably overlap, and therefore work towards the same outputs and outcomes, but which are not converged, or they don't work in a coherent manner. So all this forms part of the complex environment that we are in today. So there has been world over, I'm sure that all of you might be better informed than me, that a move towards an outcome orientation in all the efforts that especially in the development sector. So therefore, I think the government of India also cannot be an exception. So therefore, we are also examining the possibility of using the same kind of a framework which has been proved working successfully in other parts of the world, and even in the developing world. There are many organizations which have tried it out in Africa and many other parts of the world, including East Asia and other countries. So impact investing and social impact bonds have gone a long way, I think, in terms of the learnings that are available. So I would only say that this is certainly a good model, there are a number of issues that probably need to be looked at before this becomes a working model in India. Fundamentally, I think it's that of the capacity of the organization which puts out that bonds issues that bond, I think. So especially public organizations, the ability to deal for instance, I was just discussing with Pradeepa on what kind of schemes perhaps could probably switch over to the social impact bond model. There are typically many schemes in the government which are based on, which are run through civil society organizations, NGOs, for instance. So there are a number of programs. I think they largely in the, like in Department of Women and Child Development, or maybe in Health Department, there are a number of programs. So it's very easy for these programs to switch over to a outcome-focused program. Currently, I think they are largely, I would say, somewhere between input and output-focused programs, which I think is pretty bad. So therefore, there is a good opportunity here to switch switch some of these programs to this social impact bond model. And I see a low-hanging fruit there. I mean, to carve out new budgets for this program is a different ball game altogether, I mean, I think. But certainly, there is a large amount of investments that governments make through the civil society organization which could be switched to this model. But herein, I think the fundamental problem which I foresee is the building of the capacity of the organization. So therefore, I think it's time to probably start a pilot, maybe pick up a few programs here and there, and then see how it could be done through a very carefully structured program wherein the capacity of the organization implementing the program is also moves in tandem with the intent that follows this model. So herein, fortunately, I think the model has got a lot of advantages in the sense that a lot of external expertise which comes into it in the form of a technical organization, in the form of an investment fund, and so on and so forth. So therefore, a lot of the capacity that's required is externalized to that extent. But nevertheless, the ability to work in the, within this contract and ensure that the contract plays by the rule book, you know, is where the difficulty arises, because more often than not, the ability of a public organization to manage such a complex contract is where sometimes the question is. So therefore, I wouldn't say it's an insurmountable problem, but certainly it's worth the effort, because I mean moving towards an outcome-oriented program or a scheme is something which should be the desire of all forward-looking governments. So with this few words, I've offered that to Pratibha that we should start initiating a dialogue with Niti Aayog, because Niti Aayog works with most of the government organizations, into picking up a few programs and starting running them on this model. So I think we should start working on it, and I will certainly play a role in kind of linking up this whole process so that we get the process initiated. So that is about the government, I think. I would also say that there is a tremendous opportunity outside the government also, For instance, CSR, This is I also chanced to run through a paper about which I had thought about a couple of years back as well. There's a lot of CSR money. I think the amount that is being talked about is about 14,000 to 15,000 crores. Maybe it may go up to 20,000 crores every year. So this pool is pretty big. So the potential for this pool to be leveraged, the CSR and you get the social impact funds from abroad and maybe from within the country, I think maybe it could grow 3 times, 4 times, maybe X times. And I'm sure that the amount that could be leveraged is I think as much as you can imagine. So that is one part of the story. The second part of the story is that if you look at the CSR impact program, some of them are well run. And I think I would say that some corporates are taking extremely personal interest in these programs. Like for instance, I have seen programs run by TVS Foundation and Tata Foundation and all those things. They're very professionally run. But much of the other investments which could perhaps may not be as effective. I'm not very sure about how the CPSUs deal with it. I think now they have taken up the aspirational districts for as a focus. So perhaps there is a case maybe where we could leverage that fund, set up an aspirational district impact fund, and then maybe the pool size could get bigger than the pool that the CPSEs or the public sector enterprises themselves have. So I think that seems pretty exciting. So given that potential, So only thing is that perhaps we need a change in the regulations. I see that we also a group within this has also addressed the Ministry of Civil Corporate Affairs, and we would be very happy to also pursue that agenda with them. I think that is worth the effort in enabling an AAF structure also to be beneficiaries of the CSR funding. The third thing is that obviously the private sector itself, contracts between two private sector entities, because I have seen, I had a very long association with the civil society organizations in Tamil Nadu when I was, for 2 years, I was part of the Tamil Nadu Women's Development Project. So where, there were almost like, I could say I visited almost like 500 NGOs across the state. There are all shades, some of them extremely good, some of them, mediocre, some of them outrightly, I think I would say that they don't deserve the funding they receive, and so on and so forth. So therefore, even in the NGO sector, which is outside the government domain, I think we find a lot of variation in the capacities, variation in the intent, and variation in the in the in the in the in the in the ability to implement social development projects. So I would feel that there is also a tremendous opportunity for investors who are in the NGO funding space, So I think they also should be brought over to this platform, where probably this technical expertise and the financial discipline that goes with the monitoring system that this whole arrangement proposes into getting such kind of programs into a properly outcome focused initiative. So with these few words, I will end this thing, and I would be very happy to. I'm here more to learn from you rather than give a lecture. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Words spoken by you are going to be music to the ears of people in, on this table and on the phone, I'm sure, because some of the things that you've mentioned, whether it's leveraging the CSR money through the AIF structure or putting a financial discipline on the NGOs through these models, bringing the private sector in, or doing pilot projects, under the aegis of whether your ministry or through Niti Aayog or an interministerial structure. I mean, these are things that we've been discussing with the ecosystem here in closed doors, but would really require somebody inside the government, with a visionary like you, who can help us guide through. And I'm going to turn to my colleagues and then open it up for discussion in the room and on the phone, because we've come across through certain issues that we can, whether it's legal, tax, regulatory, that we can, they might not all fall under your aegis, but I think it'll be helpful for you to know what the issues are, so that whenever this dialogue happens, we have a champion. Mayapan, over to you.
Thanks, Pratibha. Thank you, sir. So in terms of addressing what are the legal, regulatory, or tax challenges that arise in this sector, we've had the experience of working across the board with different kinds of investors and parties and stakeholders who have varied interests in this space. Right now, it's not that everybody wants to set up a large project or even expect market returns or muted returns, or some people just want to give grant money. So keeping that in mind, the first thing that comes up is, of course, we have seen a few examples both internationally and domestically work. There are not too many of them. There are a couple of social venture funds that have been set up, and there are a couple of project-specific funding that has been raised through development impact bonds, or the famous case in Rajasthan in terms of educating women, girls, children. So except for those, there haven't been too many examples in India currently, and the reason is because of the legal and regulatory challenges that the sector faces.
The Rajasthan model was not an Indian instrument.
It was an offshore
instrument.
Yeah. So the idea here is to try and come up with legal solutions or structures that we believe would help the partners or the investors achieve their strategic objectives. So when we take a project where there are a couple of investors either abroad or in India and they want to do something project specific, there is a strong cohesion in their interest, right? Because they want the same kind of returns, or they want to do outcome funding model, SIB or a DIB model kind of works. And but if you want to do something at a larger scale, right, that's when what kind of legal entity do you use? How do you pool these funds? How do you reflect the difference in interest, right? How do you pool in one vehicle money from investors who want market returns, who want muted returns, or who are also willing to give grant money? And how do you scale and do something flexible? So that's where the social venture funds or AIFs provide a good vehicle. And they have the ability to track different interests and give returns as per the investors' expectations, and also tie it to projects on where the fund actually invests. You can tie returns or outcomes to certain projects in the same vehicle. So it allows you the flexibility and scale. Also, sir, spoken about untapping CSR funds into allowing it to be invested into impact funds as well. So, but despite the huge potential, the difficulties that are facing these models today is that we have noticed that the stakeholders sometimes are quite conservative in their views when it comes to what is possible. And that's where clarification from the government in terms of what is clearly doable and not doable will help the sector go a long way. Because as advisors, when we say we look at the law, okay, there is a little bit of interpretation that needs to be done. And for instance, like with social venture funds, right? It's one of the few funds, category one funds, which allows for grant money to be taken from not-for-profits. Not, you can't pull in grant money from other in other funds. But despite that, the reason it has not seen a lot of uptick is because it says you can give, you may give muted returns, correct? Now, the way we read it was it was an enabling provision. It was never meant to be mandatory, right? You want somebody, you raise money to invest into a social venture, and you may give muted returns. But the industry seems to have taken the conservative view that this actually means you must give muted returns, which has turned away a lot of people, and which at least that's not the way we read the regulations. So things like this, if there is more clarity and support from the government saying that that's not the intention, or because that would go a long way in helping these structures work in the future. Apart from that, I think from the tax perspective as well, so we're talking about change in time, change in business models and thought processes. Now, the old traditional profit-making philanthropy model, was based on the fact that you make profits no matter what, and then you set aside some money for charity. We have come a long way across in this space where now we're talking about impact investing, where both returns and impact can both be achieved without compromising either. Now, the thing is that the laws haven't, like especially the income tax law, has not kept pace with this change, because if you see the tax exemptions that are given to charities, the certificate that they get, now you're not allowed to invest in certain units. So if today a charity wants to invest into the units of an impact fund, they can't do that. They risk losing their entire tax charitable status, right? Or if they want to, let's say, give a grant money to a social venture fund, the AIF regulations allow it. The intention is for one part of the regulator says, okay, I want to promote this sort of activity. But the Income Tax Act, there is always the risk that what if my grant to an SVF as a private body is questioned? What if it is questioned that this is not actually charitable expenditure? And therefore, it's not just that particular expense is disallowed. I run the risk of having my entire tax exempt status revoked. So which is a huge risk for a charity to take. So it's not even like you can do a test case of giving a small amount of grant, see what the regulator's response is. So because of these sort of hurdles, I think that's where the kind of the place is stuck, and help by people like Rajaraman will go a long way in helping this go forward. Also, just to, I'll be handing over to Rahul as well to address some of the FCRA regulations that come in, because in this space, there is a lot of funding that, potentially can come in from foreign outcome funders, foundations who want to actually fund outcomes in India. But in terms of the other regulatory challenges that they face, I think Rahul would be better placed to address.
Thanks, Mayapan. So in terms of the outcome funding, we have seen two clear trends. One is foreign foundations acting as an investor and using their program related investment portfolio to make investments into social enterprises in India. However, there's another portfolio that they also look at, which is in terms of providing grants to nonprofits and social enterprises here in India. Now, when we look at a larger SIB model, the idea is that the outcome funder would also make good for the investments that risk investors take, right? Now, so when such outcome funding is to be given to an SVF, there is a potential that it could be treated as a grant, despite the fact that the recipient would be an SVF. And while interacting on our SIB model, we did come across this specific concern from quite a few handful of noted offshore funders who were of the view that this could potentially also be treated as a foreign contribution, despite the fact that the recipient would be an SVA vehicle. So probably some clarity on that should also help. Another issue is also in respect of intermediaries using service providers that are non-profits. Now, one problem that Income Tax Act has is in relation to the way it at times acts inhibitory in allowing social enterprises to scale up. For example, the moment these nonprofits start making profits or start engaging in commercial activities that are in line of charity, at times the assessment of income for that year is denied. So that always remains a risk for these social enterprises, which I think we also need to figure out how to streamline it further. Thanks.
And to add further to what Rahul was saying, and this is an ecosystem that we are trying to build for impact investment, right? It's not just the Income Tax Act, it's not just the CSR laws, it's not just the FCRA. Even if we look at something as small as the LLP Act, in one of our structures, we were looking at it quite closely, and we were saying that one of the vehicles that the social venture could be, or that the social venture fund could invest into, is a LLP. And we said, okay, can we use this LLP to conduct not-for-profit activities? And there is a Ministry of Corporate Affairs FAQ which clearly says, no, you can't have an LLP purely for not-for-profit activities, because the Act itself prescribes that partners have to get together with the view of making profit. Right. So now, in a situation where all of this worked well. All of this worked well in a situation where profit making was the only incentive or only, you know, reason for setting up these entities. But when you are coming up thinking about impact investment in terms of choice of vehicles, either I have to be a not-for-profit or I have to be a for-profit. There is no via media in between that allows me to, you know, use a vehicle to do both. And that's the thing, that across all these laws, I think the main thing that needs to change is the mentality or the mindset, in that to accept that today this is the norm, this is the norm in the industry, that you can make both profit and also focus on outcomes. And nobody is just asking for, you know, just allowing money to be invested in something that is broadly termed as impact. We do want to also strengthen the norms around measuring and managing impact. And I think that's something that the industry is keen on as well. And maybe more work needs to be done on that element. But the starting point for all of this is to, at a high level, accept the fact that impact investment can allow for both these things to happen, and have changes across the ecosystem of laws that impact the space so that all of them come in line. And the difficulty there also is that, like Pratibha was saying, sometimes with CSR, you go to the Ministry of Corporate Affairs. For Income Tax, it's the Income Tax Department. For AIFs, it's SEBI. And then for LLP Act, it's somebody else. So it is, you are dealing with multiple regulators, and you have to get all of them on the same page to enable this place to flourish.
Thanks, man, Rahul. I guess from our perspective, what we have seen, just summarizing, is two key issues. One is the regulatory uncertainty, which, you know, in a private sector, you're taking risks for investments, and we still see clients go ahead, you know, take certain measured risk and go ahead and make the investment, even if laws are not very clear. That's very difficult in this space because, you know, you have foundations working towards creating impact, and their money is precious. And so unless they have full clarity, they can actually commingle the private money with the social impact funding. They don't want to jump into the fray. Second is ownership within the government. You know, it's not very conducive, the atmosphere, to be able to create the kind of ecosystem that we have seen in certain other jurisdictions. For example, we were discussing the UK model, where the UK government has created a Centre for Social Impact Bonds, and through that process, they've combined the value of 80 million and leveraged a further 320 million. So, you know, this is a model, you know, already very well. We've tried it in infrastructure. Something for you to consider is maybe a social innovation fund like US has done. So then it will be under the aegis of Ministry of Finance. And, you know, it can be a regulatory sandbox where, you know, the first one is done by the ministry itself. We use that to leverage more funding and create the first model for the impact, and, you know, then roll it out further. So just for your consideration. At this point, I want to, because we've got so many people on call and in the room, I'm going to open it up for one or two questions, comments in the room, and then go to the phone and come back to the room, just to be fair to the people on the call. Sorry, go ahead, please. Please introduce yourself. We have a mic.
Good evening, and thank you very much for your positive laying down the foundation for this discussion. I'm Anu Gupta. I represent Department for International Development, British High Commission, which is the government of UK's International Development Cooperation Agency. And we work very closely with the government of India on the Development Cooperation Program. You highlighted a number of players who could potentially be positive actors in this. And our work in India is totally is part of our bilateral relationship agreed with DEA in the first instance. I wanted your views, given that we just heard Pratibha saying that UK has actually had a journey of work on SIBs and DIBs, and we are very keen to engage in this, have not yet done so far. On your views, if Government of India will be happy for us to be an active player in this field, whether it's capacity building, coming in as an investor, or technical expertise, because this will be a shift from a traditional model where we are primarily a government-to-government, or governments, whether it's at the central or state. So any views or direction that should we venture in this space, will we get acceptance from Government of India if we are willing to be an active participant on promoting SIBs, DIBs in the country?
There is nothing preventing you. I mean, SIB is actually, I mean, today, if it's between two private parties, I don't think, I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong, is there something preventing anybody in entering through a contractual arrangement between two private parties? I mean, I think, suppose you want to come in and do something.
We don't see us as a private body, actually. That's the reason. All our work
but
is in
agreement. But it
will
be subject to the FCRA process,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So
yeah.
That is the only constraint which I see. Otherwise, I don't see anything preventing you. I mean, like, so... So otherwise, I mean, if you look at DFID's work with DEA, I think we are already partnering on the GG, Green Growth Equity Fund, you know, I mean, which is part of NIF. So I think, so we already have a relationship. So we could also think of a similar G2G initiative also is a possibility. Even through, I mean, the Social Innovation Fund is a potential area where we could work together. I mean, yeah.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone, and I want to begin with complimenting the NDA team for putting this focus session together. I'm Saurabh from Social Finance India. We are a not-for-profit ourselves, sir, just recently set up, early days for us, but we're part of the Global Social Finance Network. So the first chapter was set up in the UK, and that's where the first impact bond got conceptualized. So the reason, our very genesis in India is to scale up the entire impact bond structure. And see how it can be done. We've been working very closely with the NDA team around the, you know, defining the structure in which this could be done at scale through a fund structure where lots of people could get involved. As you mentioned, clearly there are some low-hanging fruits around first bringing in the CSR, the CSR money and seeing how it works, how it can be used for outcomes-based commissioning. While a lot of efficient work is being done by certain players, but for the entire, it to work on an outcomes, commissioning basis, some of the risks around the FCRA, which would be for foreign funders, not for the CSR particularly. But even on the CSR side, the clarity whether giving the CSR money to an SPF would qualify, something with where Minister of Corporate Affairs clarifications, etc., are required. I think another key piece that comes, and I'm equating this to the transition that happened in the PPPs and the infrastructure space, was a lot of effort was put in by bilateral agencies in working with the government agencies and strengthening the commissioning framework within the government. So I remember there was a program we ran at IDFC where I was there earlier, where we worked with the through a KFW grant and DEA to embed a program of capacity building within the ATIs so that government officials could look at PPPs and consider PPPs wherever they would make work. So I think on the health side, education side, while PPPs haven't picked up, in the social sectors and outcome-based commissioning, could be an area where we could look at strengthening the government capacity itself.
Could we start taking questions on the call, and then we'll come back to the room since we can be here longer. So we are ready to take questions from the chorus call.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We have the first question from the line of Ankit from Grameen Impact. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Ankit from Grameen Impact. Just wanted to check that if the NBFC is providing upfront funding as a loan to the NGO and a not-for-profit which is registered to receive CSR funding. So there are two parts to my question. Can the CSR money be used to pay back that principal, and can the CSR money be additionally used to pay some impact interest to the NBFC or the lender?
I think all of us would like some clarity on that as well. I think there's a question like this which, you know, kind of riddle the industry, where despite nothing preventing private parties from contracting to do that, I think the kind of little bit of doubt on the what the regulatory regime allows us to do and not allow us to do kind of raise these questions. And that's where, even if we take a legal view and I as a lawyer advise you saying this is doable, there is still some reluctance on part of the parties, you know, who have to be responsible to the government authorities at some point to say that, to take this kind of step forward. So even if we say this is the view of the law, an additional clarification by the respective department or regulator involved would go a long way in like making this possible.
And technically, currently, the definition under the schedule for what can be given under the regulations is very restrictive. You know, there are very few heads, and the general consensus is if it's not falling within those heads, don't do it. And if we ask NCA, we get the same answer. So I hope.
In fact, just to answer to that question of NBFC. So as of now, the way CSR is understood is to understand the context that under CSR laws, the deployment is purely to be made to nonprofits, and the monetization is something which the law as of now, you know, does not cover such monetization aspect within its ambit. So to answer your question specifically, any such division of such deployments into principal and loan amount, and then probably repayment linked with certain performance, may not be fully covered under the ambit of existing CSR law.
But having said that, sorry, this may happen here, I think there is a good case to be made to say why it should be in the future, going forward with our new thinking, and you know, that's sort of the ecosystem change that I think the industry is looking for at this point.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions can press star and one. Ladies and gentlemen on the call, if you wish to ask a question at this time, you may press star and one on your touchtone telephone.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we don't have any more questions on the call. In the meantime, I'm just going to, because we have many hands raised in the room, so can we go ahead, please, with your questions?
Good evening. My name is Ria Saxena. I represent Asha Impact. I've been also working very closely with Mayappan and Rahul to put together the representation around how can CSR be used effectively. I just had one question for you, sir. In a lot of the conversations that we did with some people at Niti Aayog or different government departments, just one broad overarching feedback that we got from them was that a lot of the government schemes are very input driven in their accounting systems, and to overhaul that and complete it and to change that mindset and even that accounting system itself will be a mammoth task. So just wanted to ask you, what do you think could be some practical steps or some of these other low hanging areas where you think we can really shift the needle from this input driven way of accounting to more of that more of the output-based driven of accounting, where we're not just giving reimbursement for a bill.
So, if you look at it, when government already is working in a particular area, I would say there are a number of World Bank programs. I don't know, somebody who must have noticed. There is a pay-for-performance component inside that. So, I mean, this is being tested in different circumstances. So, I mean, it's little difficult because when you say that you will receive your money after you deliver, it's a little complex because some kind of deliveries would require capital. So, you can't be like saying you will get your money after you say that your enrollment is complete because you need capital. So, it's something which, in my view, needs to be done with a balance because 100% of the payments that are due can't be based on the last milestone, you know. So milestone based payments are a step forward, I think you just look at some outputs being delivered and then finally you pay the final the incentive for the outcome. So this is something which is doable in my view. The second thing which I feel is that we need to get just started, you know, and in the sense that, we can't be looking for every program to be reformed to this model. That is not going to work because some of these schemes are complex where it is center and the states, delivering a part of it. State governments need to fall in line. So I think, therefore, in my view, some schemes may not, all the schemes may not be looked at the moment. So as I said already, there is a pool of funds where the government is already working with civil society organizations. These can be the first to start with, where I would say it's a low-hanging fruit. The other thing is that, as one of you mentioned, the setting up of a center for social innovation or a social innovation finance unit, it could be a starting point where I think the capacity building could start immediately, I think. So these are two, three things which can happen in parallel. So I would say that initially, I think, though it may be a few programs, I think it is worth the trial by getting them launched as fast as possible. So I guess that's how it should be. You shouldn't look at too long into the future and see whether you will be able to do big ticket things. But get started and establish a few successes. I think that they themselves will be proving grounds saying that we could do more.
Any more questions in the room? Okay. On that note, sir, we will, I know it's been a long day for you, but thank you very much. It's very heartening when we meet somebody like you who is willingly, I just had to ask sir once, and, you know, he was very willing to come, and I could see what he was really looking forward was to the discussion and meeting the people and the stakeholders here and see, you know, what solutions we can come up with. So to me, this is an ongoing dialogue with like-minded people working in an area to provide a solution. Hopefully this is a very good first step that, sir, we can, with your help, really take it to fruition.
Can I also mention, we are also looking at, I'd be very happy to kind of support the possibility of the impact investing sector grow in India. Because I think I'm more enamored of the outcome focus that it comes with it. So, there could be a lot of learnings which go into government as a result of this process, I think, and maybe government schemes also could perhaps reform as a result of this process. So, if there are suggestions and ideas on how, you mentioned some of the legal problems, etc. So, if there are some papers which you have written up on how the government can support the impact investing industry, I'll be very happy to receive them. So kindly let me know. And if there are anybody else who want to reach out to us also, I'll be very happy to do that. You can note down my email ID. It's jsinv-dea@nic.in. jsinv-dea@nic.in. So I'll be very happy to receive your inputs. Thank you. Can I leave?
Yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you also, Mr. Vijay Tyagi. Sorry, I didn't introduce you before, but sir's Director Investments.
Handles the FDI.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. On behalf of Nishit Desai Associates, this concludes our webinar. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.